You've got to shoot this bit, Margaret! You've got to shoot it!
Maybe in my sleep about 5 nights ago.
Put it down.
Billy Major, Charlie Guest, Isla Harding.
You shouldn't be laughing when you're saying woman trapped in any position.
Something's gone wrong there.
I'll be standing on the table with my hands in the air spraying champagne over everybody else.
That didn't sound like Darth Vader at all, did it? I hope they know I'm in here. Ah, you have taught me well, Master. Welcome, listeners, to episode 16 of the Whiteout podcast. My name is Rob Stewart, and I'm here with my co-host, Dom Killinger of In the Snow magazine, UK to Alps e-car pioneer. Just listen to our last podcast. Prolific winter sports publisher, obviously. Titan of the industry. And more recently, director of photographer at the SIGB ski test in La Clusaz. Welcome, Dom.
Oh, Tom. Oh, Rob. So you fancied a bit of a role reversal, yeah?
I get it. I did. I thought I'd give you a break from the gushy intros you normally do for me.
Well, I'm glad you're taking a leaf out of my book. You're learning at last, my learned friend.
Ah, you have taught me well, Master. That didn't sound like Darth Vader at all, did it?
That was quite good. Yeah, don't get any ideas. You're not a Jedi.
Well, if I'm not one by now, I never will be. I mean, I can always hope, although actually just imagine skiing in a bathrobe. They wear those things they wear. And to be honest, I mean, who needs to levitate, right? When you can rip through bottomless powder.
Oh, that is a fact, Rob. No two ways about that. You don't even need to fight off the Sith Lords.
I don't know. Have you ever come across one of those snowboarders sitting in the middle of the slope? Only kidding. Kind of. Sort of.
Yeah. Well, on that subject, Rob, did you see that? There was that national newspaper article about skiing being too fast and furious. Did you see that?
Oh, yeah, I did, actually. I read that article. And firstly, I mean, there was a few inaccuracies in it, I think. Like Flynn was in Chamonix, and the recent avalanche mentioned was in the Mont Blanc range, which, I mean, I can see why they said that. But it makes me wonder whether, you know, they really know their subject when they write these kind of articles.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I had somebody on the phone to me yesterday and it was quite an interesting conversation. But I mean, as you say, the data suggest injuries are rising, but is anybody actually looking at the number of people skiing? I mean, and similarly, I had somebody message me yesterday saying, can you make a comment on the ski conditions in the most popular resorts in Europe? So I made my comment, and that is that, you know, everything's been pretty good, actually. And then she came back with the most obscure resort in Germany that I've never heard of and said, I've just looked at their webcam and it looks really bad. And I said, okay. And?
Yeah, right.
So it's kind of looking for that angle, isn't
exactly. it? Exactly. a small place very low down in Germany. So I've just had a text message literally just now from a journalist friend of mine skiing in Avoriaz and the Port de Soleil today. Fab skiing here today, especially towards Swiss side. Good advice from the tourist office to head here, he said, but conditions are very good, he's saying. So,
that's great.
That's this week in Avoriaz and Châtel and that area. So,
Well, that's good.
I mean, I think the data is interesting. I do think there is a case for many skiers and snowboarders to consider their speed versus their ability level. So I think I get the sort of point of that and the article. I have some sympathy for the article, let's put it that way.
Yeah,
I mean, skiing can be like driving a car, you know, it's very fast and you need to take responsibility. That's crucial,
right? yeah Well, I think that person who wrote that might have something against skiing, because I think last year about death of a certain ski resort, so it's maybe just something
I remember that.
Yeah.
Total nonsense, really. That's a shame. What we don't need to do is scare people, we need to educate them.
Yeah.
So maybe we should invite this person on the podcast, Dom. What do you think?
Yeah, we can make mincemeat of them. But
Well, maybe. Might be the other way around, slightly.
But even better, inviting somebody on the podcast. We have a pretty cool interview this week.
Yeah, absolutely. And that does lead us nicely into our headline news story, Dom.
Before we do that headline news story, Rob, time to mention today's sponsor, Ski Independence and Canada's Alberta. So the team at Ski Independence have been sending customers to Alberta ski resorts for almost 30 years. With oodles of personal experience, they know all about the best places to stay, the best travel options and everything in between. From Banff's best après-ski locations to breathtaking scenery at Lake Louise, or how to get the best out of a multi-centre itinerary. They highly recommend road tripping up the spectacular Icefields Parkway between Lake Louise and Jasper for an experience like no other. So, listeners, go ahead and visit ski-i.com/Alberta to find out more about booking Canada's Alberta with tailor-made specialists Ski Independence. Ah, Banff, Alberta.
Those words are rubbing off on me every week, Dom, and more and more sinking into my subconscious. I'm waking up at night going Banff, spectacular Icefields Parkway between Lake Louise and Jasper. You know, sort of getting these visions, and it's obviously working for me.
It's working. So, yes. News this week, Rob. What's the main headline that we've got this week? Something very exciting.
Yeah, fantastic news, Rory. British skier Zach Carrick-Smith of the St. Foy Ski Club. He's won the first ever British medal in an Alpine Olympic event. I mean, that's officially, of course, because we can sort of reference and mention Alan Baxter's bronze in the 2002 Salt Lake Games, which unfortunately was taken away. But yeah, this is an incredible story. And not only did Carrick-Smith win that first ever medal, it was, of course, gold.
Amazing.
In the Alpine combined event, which in this case is actually a Super G and a slalom. Then he went on to win silver in the GS, the giant slalom, and another gold in the slalom.
It's just unbelievable.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. It's absolutely unprecedented in the history of modern ski racing when it comes to Great Britain. And I'm sure we'll see a lot more from Zach and his brothers, of course, who we'll talk about in the future.
It's such a great interview, Rob. Honestly, he sent shivers up my spine just, you know, seeing the guy, hearing him talk. I mean, I suppose they're a bit of a legendary family among us in the industry, but maybe not to some of our listeners. But, you know, he's got two brothers, hasn't he? Three of them are full-time racers. One of them's a twin brother. They're quite a family, aren't they?
Yeah, they are. I mean, Luca and Freddie. Luca's now 18, racing on the fifth circuit. Freddie is the same age as Zach, like you said, twin. And coming up the ranks too, they're basically all number one in their disciplines in regards to UK skiers. Pushing that spot in the world rankings too. I've known them since they were little kids, flying around the slopes of Tee with their mum, and you know, who's four times Olympic skier, Emma Carrick Anderson, of course, and their dad, you know, legendary ski teacher Phil Smith. Yeah. And they're a force of nature. They're a force of nature. Well, we talked a little bit about that in the interview with Zach.
Yeah, I know.
Quite funny.
You were struggling to keep up with him when he was about eight.
Absolutely. I think his mum was as well, but let alone now. Who on earth could keep up with them now?
Yeah. So you managed to catch up with Zach when he just got back from South Korea. So that interview is coming up at the end of our news section. So yeah, listeners, keep a listen out for that.
Yeah, that was great to catch up with them. So what's up next, Dom?
So there's loads of good news actually on that front, Rob. I mean, we've got 17-year-old snowboarder Mia Brooks. She's taking gold at the X Games out in Aspen. I mean, that was incredible. I mean, amazing. She earned the three highest scores in that competition. She was in the lead right from the very first run and first woman to stomp a 14:40. I mean, when did you last stomp a 14? I can't even remember the last time you stomped a 14:40.
I think it was a while, isn't it? Maybe in my sleep about 5 nights ago.
Yeah, she stomped a 14:40 at the X Games in run three. She said, oh my God, that was the craziest thing I've ever done. I've been dreaming about this for such a long time, so I'm super happy. Speed was a bit of a challenge, so I just kept my head down for my last run. It was not the best 14:40, but I'm stoked to put it down.
I mean,
such a great result. I mean, we are doing well.
Yeah, it's fantastic stuff. Actually, it's also worth mentioning that Zoe Atkin also won a silver medal in the ski superpipe at the same event in Aspen, Colorado.
Amazing. It really does feel like we're kind of sending it at the minute, aren't we? I mean, Dave Riding's still the number five ranking spot for the men's slalom. Another race coming up on Sunday in Chamonix. Come on, Dave. I mean, blimey.
Yeah.
Everybody is just doing so well. What else? What else is there?
Well, yeah, there's lots of other things to talk about. Last week's SIGB ski test, Snow Sports Industries of Great Britain, that's featuring in our gear section today. Yeah. But it goes pretty well with a news story that ski manufacturer Fisher, who was obviously out at ski test last week, and we met up with them, is celebrating its centenary in 2024.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, since its inception, 2024... You know, Fisher as a company, it's definitely been at the forefront of innovation in the world of sports equipment generally. It's not just skiing. It's founded in Upper Austria by Joseph Fisher.
Yeah.
And it's still got its headquarters there. Fisher has grown from this sort of humble beginnings to become, yeah, one of the largest manufacturers of ski equipment, and you know, and a leading name in outdoor sports. So if you look at the British skiers that are on Fisher skis, Dave Riding, Billy Major, Charlie Guest, and also the freestyler Tyler Harding. So pretty cool stuff. Now, we've got a quote here from Franz Fottinger, the CEO of Fisher.
I'm sure we were at their 90th birthday. Well, did we celebrate their 90th birthday at ISPO?
Was that what it was? That crazy Fisher party?
Yeah, I've got a feeling that was their 90th.
I think it was probably just their 96th birthday, actually. There's any excuse for a party. I don't know, years and 3 months old. Yeah, exactly. Like, we're going to have a party. That's kind of what happens. It was a really good party. So good old Franz, Mr. Fottinger, he said, we're immensely proud to reach this momentous milestone in our company's history. And he said, for 100 years, Fisher's been driven by a passion for sports and a dedication to providing athletes with the tools they need to succeed. Our commitment to innovation, quality, and customer satisfaction remains as strong as ever, and we're excited to continue shaping the future of the sport of sports for the next century. I mean, what he fails to mention in that quote was the fact that actually not only are they great at making skis, they are really, really good at putting parties on.
Yeah, hosting a party. Yeah, exactly. He doesn't mention that, does he?
Doesn't.
They've had quite a switch up on their graphics this year, haven't they? For the consumer, you know, for the sort of more, you know, the pasty skis and all that. The graphics really moved on a stage this year.
Graphics have moved on, but the skis are as solid as ever. There's a lot of brands that I fail to find bad skis with, but Fisher is definitely one of them.
Yeah.
Whether it's a free ride ski or an on piece ski, you know, you feel pretty confident and solid on their skis generally.
Yeah.
So yeah, but yeah, you're right. They're kind of switching those graphics up a little bit. Yeah. What else, Dom?
Another little story that I caught on to, Rob, was, I mean, it's not a funny story, but slightly funny. Woman, I know it sounds, you shouldn't be laughing when you're saying woman trapped in any position, but
anyone trapped, but yes.
Whatever. Exactly. But yeah, yeah, anyone trapped. I can't get this one out. Woman trapped in gondola overnight. And I know that isn't a funny headline. And it's not even a funny story, but I just can't even imagine. So this woman, she's stuck trapped in a gondola in Heavenly Ski Resort in Tahoe. So this lady decided she was too tired, snowboarding back to the base. So she thought, right, I'll just quickly jump in the gondola. Somebody's seen her in. Yeah. She got on the lift, 5:48, pretty late. But obviously somebody has seen her into the gondola. So, you know, you'd expect to be safe. Doors closed. 2 minutes later, lift stops. Lights go out. Wow. She's got nothing. No phone, no torch, no nothing. And that's it. She's shouting for help. Nobody hears her. Next time she sees anybody, first thing in the morning. I mean, I know I'm laughing, and I'm only laughing because I think not laughing at it being funny, but laughing at you sort of thinking, how the hell did this happen? I mean,
I don't know. Obviously, how that happened is something's gone wrong there. And I've been in situations where I've jumped into those kind of gondolas or to go down sometimes, or very, very late runs. And you think, you know, I hope they know I'm in here. I really do.
Yeah.
And back in the day, you know, before mobile phones, obviously, if that happened, you were stuck. And it seems like in this case, weirdly, Monica didn't have a phone with her. I mean, who does that these days? You know, or if your phone runs out of batteries, it's very rare that it's made a news story out of it. So it shows how rare this kind of thing does happen.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm sure the resort feels horrible about what's happened, and I'm sure they will put things into place. So it never happens again.
There's definitely a season pass going that way somewhere, isn't there? There's definitely a season pass winging in the post to Monica Lasso, for sure.
I mean, thank goodness it was a gondola and not a chairlift, because obviously happened before, hasn't it? There's made a film about that, haven't they, where people were stuck on a chairlift overnight. And at least in a gondola, you are protected a little bit from the weather if it wasn't too cold outside.
And I mean, imagine if it had been minus 20 odd night. I mean, that's harsh, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, it's not a nice thing to experience. I mean, I wouldn't like to be in a gondola for a night on my own without anyone knowing.
So that's it for our news this week, Rob. Let's go to our interview with Zach and see what Zach had to say.
Hi, Zach. How are you?
Yeah, I'm good, thanks.
Fantastic to see you. And thanks for coming on the Whiteout podcast today. So I think everybody knows 2 golds and a silver medal at the Youth Winter Olympic Games. A gold medal in the Alpine combined, a gold medal in the slalom, and a silver in the GS. And you're the only British skier officially now to win an Alpine medal at a Winter Olympic event. Oh, my goodness. I'm just going to reference Alan Baxter, who many years ago in Salt Lake City did win a bronze, but it was obviously taken away from him. But, you know, that's in the past. So congratulations.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Yeah. And I know you've just got back from South Korea and you've probably still got a bit of jet lag going on there, but it's great to see you. So just to set the scene a little bit for our listeners, you're in the British junior team. You ski with BSA, the British Ski Academy, and also the ski club in Saint-Foy, which is pretty close to where you grew up, right? In the Tarentaise region of France. Yeah. Now to the question, Zach, this is down to you now. The first one I've got for you is you've got two brothers, right? You're one of three. How do they feel about all of this?
Yeah, they're very proud of me. They were very happy. I think actually they may have been, have set a really early alarm to watch the race because it was about 6 a.m. when I was racing for them. Okay. They're very proud of me. And as some people know, my twin brother, Freddie, just missed the selection because there was only one place for Team GB. So it was so tight between me and him. It was like just before the selection, I was like just ahead. And then after the selection, he went ahead. So but they're very proud of me.
That's really tough, isn't it, for him? And I guess he'll have his chances. He'll have his opportunities one day, I am sure.
He's off. He's going to be doing the Junior World Champs this upcoming week, I think. So
is that in Châtel?
Yes, like near Morzine area.
Yeah, yeah. I was just skiing down the piste where the Super G is going to be last week, actually. So, looking good over there. That's fantastic. Right. What is your biggest motivation for skiing?
I mean, my biggest motivation is, I guess there's my mum. I want to push myself. I want to show that Team GB can be right up top along with the other massive skiing countries. And I just want to prove to myself that I can, that I can do it.
I mean, you grew up in France and it's really interesting you say that. So actually what you're saying is like being British kind of motivates you, does it? Does it motivate you to beat other nations?
Yeah, I think, it definitely motivates me. And it was amazing having that come true and seeing GB on the top spot. It's just,
It's fantastic. And obviously, you know, mum is a former Olympic ski racer, four times Olympian. Dad is a phenomenal ski coach and also a former racer as well. What age was it where you started just to realize that you were better than them and you could beat them down the slope?
I think I was just turning 2, 3. No.
I bet it was.
I don't know. We kind of moved into more professional races, like 6, 7-ish.
Yeah.
So I think towards that time, maybe a little bit up from that.
I remember skiing with you, actually. You won't remember this, but I do. And I remember skiing with you in teen. I think it was probably about 7 or 8 years ago now. And you were with your mum and I just randomly bumped into you. And I was like, oh, hi, guys. How you doing? Yeah. And we did a run and it was just hilarious because all three of you were just flying down the slope. And your mum and I were just trying to keep up. And especially me. But it was hilariously funny. Okay, so what is your favorite ski racing discipline? And why? Why would it be? What's your favorite? Because you do pretty much all of them, right?
Yeah. Yeah, as we're not such a big team, we don't get that much Super G training. So I think I love the speed. I love speed disciplines. Yeah. I'm not as strong at them, but I really like going fast. But at the same time, I really love slalom. Because there's always something happening. It's very exciting. Very exciting to watch. Very exciting to ski. So I'd probably say, I think it's probably my best discipline.
Okay.
But I mean, I love it all. But as well as giant slalom, when you get a really nice conditions, really nice course, that can feel as good, maybe even better than slalom. But probably right up there, slalom would be my favorite.
I think it's, for me, it's definitely the most fun discipline to watch. I love watching the slalom and the format is brilliant. And I really like the way the format works. You know, ski racing, I guess, it's a privilege. It's a fantastic thing to be able to do, but you need quite a lot of cash to make that work. Yeah. And yeah. I mean, what do you need in terms of funding? And do you think you'll get any support now as well from GB Snowsport?
Well, we're completely self-funded, and we're helped by sponsors, and that's the reason we can keep this journey. But it's a very expensive sport, so
I know you're relying on support and sponsorship. I mean, I've known your parents for a long time, and I know how much they put into that. But when you get those kind of results coming through, I mean, surely there's got to be a lot of people out there very, very interested in that and the exposure you're going to get. So, I mean, do you feel that sort of pressure on you in that way, or does that not come into it?
I think in the back of my head, there's a little bit, but I try to kind of push it away.
Okay.
So there's always a bit of pressure just for yourself to ski well as well as,
of course.
Yeah, just, but as soon as you push out that start, you completely forget all that and just focus on skiing well.
And this kind of life you have, I mean, it's pretty sort of fairly unique, I would say, you know, at your age, traveling around. I mean, how do you handle that day to day? Do you find that can be difficult, or do you love every minute of it, or somewhere in the middle?
It is difficult, but I love every minute of it. I mean, okay. I don't know if I'll just turn this quickly. If you can see there, there's
we could just look out the window of where Zach is now, and there's beautiful snowy mountains out there and sunny weather. So yeah.
Yeah.
Not the worst place
to
be.
So of course there's the traveling is very hard, because traveling to Korea on the way back, we didn't sleep for 50 hours.
Oh my
goodness. We left at 2 a.m., 6-hour drive. Then we were on the flight. It was a day flight for 14 hours to London, then another flight back to Munich. And it was a long, long trip.
Yeah.
So definitely that's hard, but I mean, it's all worth it. It really is it's amazing. It's amazing lifestyle.
And what would you say now at this point has been the most memorable moment on skis in your life?
I think I had an amazing experience at the beginning of last year where I got to forerun the World Cup in Kranjska Gora in Slovenia. And that was really, really an eye-opener just to see how everything works and just kind of prove that I want to be there, because it was just an amazing experience, amazing to race and ski around all the top races.
And that was a slalom race, was it?
That was a giant slalom.
Yeah.
It was prize for... I did an international race in Slovenia a few weeks before that, and the overall winner got to four on that race. So it was just an amazing experience. That.
Wow. And how different was that World Cup course compared to, say, the Olympic course you've just raced in South Korea? How technically different was it, and demanding was it?
I think it was definitely very demanding because of the length of it. So it was a very long, hard course, but technically the course set wasn't too hard. Okay. I think lengthwise it was much longer than the Youth Olympics, but the Youth Olympics was set much tougher, so you had to kind of use your head more and be smarter about it.
Okay. And what about winning silver then? How did you feel about that at the time after where you've won a gold, now you've got silver? I mean, what was the feelings that went through you as you were on the podium in second place?
Yeah, it was still amazing. In the GS, I was ranked 15th. So there wasn't really much of an expectation. I just thought there's nothing to lose after the day before.
Right.
I had achieved everything I've ever wanted, so I would just wanted to go into that GS and just give it my all, and to finish second behind the French guy that won. I was racing him in U16 for a few years, and I know he's very, very fast, and so just to be second behind him was really, it was an honor. Yeah, it was amazing.
And away from ski racing for a minute, if you enjoy free skiing, what is your favorite ski area and why?
Probably, I think I love this area right now, here where I live.
And where are you?
Vagran in Austria.
Oh, yeah.
So we rent a place out in Austria for the season, and it really is an amazing ski race, ski area. Just when it snows here, it's just like you can ski and just keep skiing forever. There's so many resorts you could travel to.
So what's it linked to? What are the resorts?
It's linked to Flakau, you know where the World Cup is?
Flakau, yes.
Yeah, and then I wouldn't know all the
Altenmark.
Names. Yes,
not far from Altenmark. Lots of history of ski racing down there, of course, and it's where Atomic skis are based.
Yeah, right. And just around this area, there's so many places we can go to train. You know, there's Reiteralm, which is it's a top training place for a lot of the World Cup skiers. Like, there's always, you see Schifrin, Odermatt, Pantero, all the top guys out there.
Fantastic.
But, yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So what's next now for you? I mean, coming down from all of this success in South Korea, you've got to continue work, right? You've got to continue your work. So where are you going now?
We're going to stay here for a bit, just kind of take a few days off to recover, get rid of the jet lag, then get back into training. And then in 5-6 days, we go over to Bormio, Italy for the English Championships.
English Championships.
Yeah.
And what are your goals for the English Championships then? In Bormio,
after an event that as big as the Youth Olympics, I feel like if I can get down that and perform my best, I know I can do it in other races now. So I think results wise, I don't have any goals really. I just want to go out, have fun, and I know that Bormio is an amazing race. It's amazing conditions usually, and it's just a really fun course to ski. So just go there, have fun. Yeah.
Sounds like a great attitude, Zach.
Yeah.
Good. All right. And of course, your two brothers, Luca and Freddie, will be with you as well in Bormio. And I'm sure that you will push each other on and be very, very competitive. But just come on, last question. Tell us who's the best skier out of you three?
Well, I think it's always been my older brother because he's 2 years older, and he's always been pushing us, so we kind of just keep following him, especially with my twin brother, Freddie.
Yeah.
It's always very close, and I think that's one of the reasons I've got so high up at such a high level is because of him, because, like, he will go ahead of me, and then I'll think, oh, I need to push harder, so then I'll come up and I'll go ahead of him, and it just, we've been doing this our whole life, and it really has helped us get to the point we are.
That's a very diplomatic answer, Zach. And I think though that sort of diplomacy will take you a long way as well in your career, both on and off the slopes. Been a real pleasure. Thanks, Zach. Congratulations on the medals in South Korea. It's an absolutely phenomenal achievement. And everybody, I was at the SIGB ski test last week when those results were coming through, you know, a big industry event with lots of former ski racers there, you know, the likes of Finley Mickle and many others. And everybody was talking about what was happening and talking about your medals over there. And it was really fantastic to see and hear all of that. So, yeah, well done. And we'll be watching out for you, of course, as much as we can over this season and beyond. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you very much. Thank you for having me.
What a great interview, Rob. I mean, he's so bashful, isn't he?
So diplomatic about his brothers as well. Oh, you know, I was like, come on. they're great kids. And you know, I've had the pleasure of knowing Phil and Emma for many years and seeing them as kids. And I do remember, actually, a few years ago, they were interviewed. I remember the interviewer at the time saying to them, asking the question of whether they would make the Olympics one day. And their faces were sort of dropped in horror of this question. I mean, it was a good question and a perfectly good question.
Yeah.
And I know the interviewer, and I spoke to her afterwards and she laughed about it because it was amazing for her as well, the reaction. And they dropped their faces and they just said, of course we're going to the Olympics. We're going to win the Olympics.
Nice.
And this was there at the age of maybe, I don't know, 11 or 12 or something. But it was just, it was the way they said it as well. It was their expectation.
Yeah.
It wasn't even a question whether they would make the Olympics. I mean, obviously the goal was to win, not just to get there. And that attitude is now coming through. You know, you can see it shining. And that is down to the coaching of Phil Smith, and Emma Carrick Anderson, who are, let's face it, you know, anyway, some of the most experienced coaches out there. So
it was a very interesting comment. What drives you on? And I mean, it's an involuntary thing, isn't it? The first thing he said, well, my mum, you know, so like it was very interesting to hear that. And that's great that he's got that inspiration. It's fantastic. It's, yeah, great interview.
So yeah, it's a massive focus there to achieve. And it's brilliant, but they seem to be loving it as well. And that's the great thing. They seem to generally be loving it. And that's so important. So important.
Yeah, absolutely. He definitely did major on the enjoying it. And that was a really enlightening thing to hear. You know, I'm just going to go there. I'm going to have fun. And that was, it was great to hear that. So yeah, very good indeed. Good luck to those boys. And let's keep a tight eye on them. What do we got next? Over to the weather corner, Rob. What do we got in the weather?
Yes, Dom. So this week's weather roundup is brought to you by Ski Weekends, the flexible ski holiday experts. Choose from 10 fantastic catered chalets and over 100 hotels in 40 resorts. You can stay as long as you like with SkiWeekends.com.
I'll take 30 days, please, Ski Weekends.
Yes. I'll take all week, every single weekend of the ski season and just bolt on the middle bits too.
Yes, exactly.
That'll do.
Yes, Rob, indeed. Sponsored by Ski Weekends for the weather this week, but also we've got a fantastic competition from Ski Weekends where you can win a 3 or 4 night stay for two adults in a Ski Weekends 3-star classic catered chalet. And it includes return airport transfers to Geneva Airport. Did I say transfers or transfers? So that includes return transfers to Geneva Airport as well. So don't forget to head over to inthesnow.com/competitions. Very easy question to answer. How many chalets does Ski Weekends have in Avoriaz? Head over there, answer the question. Let's now see what the weather's got in store for us from Ski Weekends. So, yes, Rob, the snow report for this week brought to you in association with Ski Weekend. So, lots to report. Temperatures across the Alps are a little higher than we would expect, and not so much precipitation in the way of snow. Some of the lower resorts are seeing rain, which is obviously a shame. However, the good news is that we only need temperatures to rise a little bit, and suddenly that precipitation will turn to snow, obviously. However, at height, most ski areas are holding up, which is good news. We've got, obviously, Ben and Clow going around their 24 resorts that we're going to hear about later, and they will give us an on-the-ground report of what snow conditions are generally like. Overall, it seems pretty good high up, but obviously lower down, things are getting a little tougher. It does feel a little spring-like. However, we all know that can change at the touch of a button. And last season, we know that later season, we had some big dumps of snow and had some fantastic spring conditions. Moving across into Switzerland and Austria, Crans-Montana in Switzerland, again, warmer temperatures there feeling quite spring-like, but conditions, as you'd expect in a fabulous resort like Crans-Montana, are staying pretty good and they are maintaining peace conditions well. Going down to Saas Fee and Zermatt, it's a little cooler, but still above zero and no snow in the short range forecast there. Looking across at Verbier, overcast, possibly some flakes of snow above 1500 meters in a few days' time, but again, lows minimum of -2 and highs up to 8 degrees. So again, unseasonally warm. The likes of Meerhof and much of the same story, as well as Kitzbühel and St. Anton too. Heading across into Italy, the likes of Bormio and Madonna, they seem to be having the same kind of weather, but Livigno looks a little on the cooler side, down to -4 degrees. And in fact, later in the week, does look like their temperatures might start dropping to more like -8 and -9, and a half decent chance of some snow later that week. So that's the 7th, 8th, 9th of February. Sumritz is around -8 today, so that's nice and cold and generally holding cooler temperatures there, generally between -4 and -8, but no snow in the forecast there. So throughout Europe, it does look pretty spring-like. Heading across into the USA and Canada. So headlining this week is Palisades, also known as, well, what used to be known as Squaw Valley to you and me, Rob. They're getting treated to some decent snowfall this week, talking up to a metre in a week. Mammoth isn't far behind, who expect to get a decent dump of around 70 centimeters on Sunday. Jackson, Vale, Winter Park, Steamboat, all expecting pretty good dumps this week, anywhere between 2 and 20 centimeters on a day. So nice getting those daily top-ups that I'm sure some of the European resorts would be very keen on right now. Park City should see up to 1 foot this week. Heavenly 2 seeing decent snowfall daily, up to 60 centimetres in a day, so 60 centimetres, 2 feet roughly. So yeah, a bunch of resorts there having a pretty good time. There's also some pretty cold resorts this week. Breckenridge and Winter Park will see temperatures as low as -23, while Vale, Mammoth and A Basin are near -20, and Park City, Steamboat, Aspen, Jackson, positively warm, minus 15. So yeah, they are having a good time in terms of temperatures, which will obviously maintain their conditions pretty well. Banff and Lake Louise, they've got a little bit more spring-like conditions, warmer than usual, certainly warmer than when I was there last year, albeit this weekend may see temperatures drop again to around minus 5 and some slight possibilities of snow in their forecast too. So I'll also be reporting live from Revelstoke and Sun Peaks next week. I'll be heading out there on Friday and for the next week. Sun Peaks looks like it's around minus 2 to minus 6, although they have had a few warmer days recently. Looks like it's going to drop before I get there because obviously that's what I ordered. Rob? Possibility of snow in Sun Peaks and Revelstoke. So again, hopefully we'll get a little bit of snow as the temperatures start to drop around minus 3, 4, 5, 6 when I get into Revelstoke next week. So that's pretty nice. Then on the other side of North America, which we haven't mentioned as much recently, we've got the likes of Tremblant. They're hovering around 0 degrees and a mix of sun and clouds, possibly a few flurries, but not a lot. Killington, same sort of temperatures, hovering around the 0 degrees and a possibility of a few flurries, but nothing to write home about. Stowe's a little cooler, around minus 6, but no snow in the forecast there. Sugarbush, again, getting nothing exciting to report there. Temperatures around 2 or 3 degrees, no snow in the forecast. So I know they're keen to see the skies open too. So Rob, West Side is where it's at the moment. They aren't having the supercalifragilistic season that they sometimes get, but daily drops, decent temperatures means Colorado, Alberta, British Columbia, they're all still favourites if you want to get great conditions. And obviously the preparation of the slopes there is outstanding. Heading over to Japan for a last look, starting in the south with Hakuba, 0 and below with patches of snow forecast for this week. Head slightly north to Niseko. It's cold down to minus 9. Snowfall even today, in fact. They've had snow 24 days in January. Can you believe 24 days of the 31 days in January, it has reportedly snowed in Niseko? I mean, that is just absolutely fantastic. Further north to Furano in Hokkaido, cold there too, minus 9, minus 10 and below with regular multi-centimeter drops of snow. So as usual, Japan is getting it all. Rob, that's it for this week. We've covered everywhere from the French Alps through to Japan, taking in Italy, Austria, Switzerland, and the USA and Canada. What more could you ask for? Rob, it's over to you.
Classic right, Japan, Rob. Dom. Classic Japan. I mean, I don't think it will stop now. And anyone heading there for the sort of end of the month or into Feb, they'll be in for a treat.
Yeah, exactly. Right, so good to hear that the weather is holding up and ski conditions are pretty good in general. Yep. They are good. I know we have got some slightly warmer areas there that we've just talked about, but in general, ski conditions are good. What have we got next, Rob? What's next?
Yeah, so it's our gear section, Dom.
Light's gone. I'm going to change these lenses, people.
We love a bit of gear, as we always say. SIGB ski test. Rob, we've been out at the snow test this week. The SIGB Snow Sports Industries of Great Britain ski test in La Clusa, testing out some of the best new skis for the 24-25 season. And it's a good event. 18 brands out there, including all the big names, Head, Rossi, Salomon, Atomic, Scott, Fisher, Alain. We saw the return of Casley as well.
Yeah.
And just to place this in consumer minds, just to make sure they know what we're talking about here, this event is bringing you, the reader or the listener, the best possible advice when you read a mag or a website or go into a shop. So retailers, magazines, they turn up, test a load of skis, write or record independent, unpaid reviews to help buyers make proper informed decisions when they come to buy a pair of skis.
Absolutely. Really well attended ski test for the retailers and the media. And yes, what a team we had representing in the Snow magazine, Dom, with, you know, two former Olympic skiers, Sam Temple and Lloyd Wallace, TV presenter and ski coach Kev Harris, current FIS racer Elsa Dooley, alongside myself and obviously you, Dom, plus two videographers. And we were also joined by our PR friend, Bethany Garner from Chamonix, and David Robertson, also from Chamonix, from Action Outdoors. So yeah, amazing.
It was a big team. It was a lot to take on, Rob. You had a lot of skis to test. You had a lot to do.
Yeah, we did. I mean, we split things into three categories across men's and women's skis.
Yeah.
On piste, all mountain and free ride. Plus we covered some ski touring skis as well. At the end of the week, we also chose some of our highlights from all of those skis and reviewed those as well.
Yeah, I was having a little tot up before this, actually, and I think we tested getting on for around 100 pairs of skis, which is incredible.
I think so.
It's a massive accomplishment, isn't it?
Yeah.
There was quite a lot of excitement, people getting excited about sets of skis. To be fair, it's probably not a bad set of skis, is there?
No, I think there's very few bad skis out there these days, with especially the brands invest so much money and do so much R&D.
Yeah, I mean, you're absolutely right. I mean, the money that's pumped into these things nowadays is a bit like cars, isn't it? You know, there are cheaper cars and there's more expensive ones, and it's the same with skis.
Yeah, sure.
You kind of get what you pay for. That doesn't mean that if you buy a cheap ski, it's going to be rubbish by any stretch. It's just like a cheap car. It will do the job, and it will do the job really, really well, but just may not be the Rolls Royce. And in many cases, people don't need the Rolls Royce. So, yeah.
There was definitely a few highlights for me. I get asked quite a lot about what skis I really like testing, but you know, there's so many. And at the end of it, I'm like, my head's a bit full of skis, to be honest. But the best thing to do is to check out In the Snow Mag on YouTube. They'll be coming through soon, and you can watch our reviews there, including our best of as well.
Absolutely, yeah. We've got all the reviews, so 100-odd reviews and the best of reviews for best all-mountain, best piste, and best free-ride skis for men and women, and that will be out over the next couple of weeks. And obviously keep an eye on our social channels as well, where we'll have some little snippets coming out as well. And obviously not just skis out there. I mean, obviously there was boots, there was goggles, there was all sorts of stuff. Obviously socks and all kinds of stuff. So it's quite nice, not in the masses.
Absolutely.
But there's a few brands out there to test out as well, isn't there?
Oh, yeah. Lots of stuff. Lots of accessories to test as well.
Yeah.
So, yeah, all good fun. A lot of fun. And you know, a lot of getting a lot of value out of trying those new skis as well.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And what, Rob, I know there's a bit of a curveball for you. Price point on skis. Do you think that's creeping up?
Mm, yeah, it's a good question. It feels like it is.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. I think skis are creeping up in price point, like everything, really. And that's due to, you know, costs from the manufacturer's side as well.
Yeah.
I still think, you know, when you look at what you're buying and the amount of work that goes into research and development and goes into incredible. Manufacturing these skis, yeah, it's not surprising that a good ski can cost around £700.
Yeah.
And that seems to be about, yeah, I seem to remember saying, well, this ski retail price around £700. There are obviously are very good skis for less money than that.
Yep.
And you can also pay more than that. You know, some of the skis, you could go up to 900, 1,000. I mean, you can start paying more than that, but you don't need, you know. But I think that £700 mark seems to be the sweet spot for a kind of very good, you know, the kind of ski that is going to be what most people, a lot of skiers, free ride skiers, or maybe very enthusiastic on-piste skiers or racers are going to be looking at.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's worthwhile mentioning as well that I genuinely am a firm believer that the right pair of skis for most skiers, for most holiday skiers, it's quite, I do feel it's important that they have the right pair of skis, that if they end up getting a duff pair of skis when they're on their holiday, it could make or break a holiday. I think it's worth mentioning that there is a consumer ski test in March, 10th to the 16th of March in Pila in Italy.
Oh, yeah.
And it's very worthwhile. I've had quite a few comments on previous year's YouTube videos of, I'm thinking about X and Y, what would you recommend? Yep. And of course, there's 100 questions to ask before you can actually recommend it. You know, not to mention sort of height, weight, ability, kind of skiing you're doing and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
And budget, yeah. I mean, at the end of the day. So I do sort of look at it and think it's very worthwhile. If you type into Google consumer ski test Pila, Aosta, it'll bring you up Ski Exchange. It'll bring you up In the Snow. We're both, you know, sort of all, not partnering on it. It's run by Ski Exchange, but it's very worthwhile consumers thinking, you know what? I am going to invest in a pair of skis and therefore I might as well get a little holiday out and go out and try a load of pairs of skis at the same time.
Well, I'll tell you what. I mean, as an experience, and you've got all these different skis to test, and it will be well organized, right? You go out there and you do that. You make a holiday out of it.
Yeah.
And honestly, it's so much fun.
And, you know,
yeah, absolutely.
You don't have to buy a pair of skis at the end of it, but obviously the likelihood is if you're going out there to do that, you're probably going to want to.
Yeah, for sure. Good.
So, Rob, our next stop, we've got a resort spotlight this week on Aosta Valley.
Shout out today to our friends at the Snow Centre Hemel Hempstead, London's closest indoor real snow slope and the largest trainer slope in the country, with a team of highly qualified ski and snowboard instructors running private and group lessons for all ages, a huge 160-metre main slope, family snow fun with the Ringo slide and an alpine-themed bar and restaurant. There is something for everyone. Visit thesnowcentre.com for more.
So, Rob, our next stop, Aosta Valley in northern Italy. I love the place. as you know.
Yeah. I mean, actually, in regards to skiing in Italy, I know this region better than any as well. In fact, I remember just a little anecdote, the age of 17. Yes, 17. Heading off to Cervinia. Heading off to Cervinia with two good mates on a ski trip in January of whatever year that was, a long time ago. Yeah. It kind of started a real love affair with that area. What about you, Dom? I know you go there a lot.
I do. I like that area. I've been there a few times. We spent New Year in Aosta, skied in Pila, and obviously we skied there together, Rob. And I mean, and Cormayar as well. Just lovely. You know what? It's lovely food. It's got it all going on, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, I like it. That Pila area, it's a nice setup there. It's kind of slightly rustic in a good way.
Yeah.
Great food and coffee, you know, Italy. Not expensive either in the grand scheme of things, relatively.
Right. Really, really, really good value for money. Mm. So, Aosta, located in the northwest of the country. It's the smallest region of Italy and also it's autonomous in its governance, which is interesting. Spectacular scenery. I think the Cervin or the Matterhorn to start with, world-class snowboarding, including fabulous off-piste in places like Champaluc. Food is fab, as I say. You know, if you think about think about some of the food and drinking places in these, you know, like Cormayar.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
It's top end, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And Cormayar restaurants, I mean, you know, so good. So good.
And obviously a history stretching back to Roman times. So they've got plenty of history there as well.
Yeah. I mean, the region's right in the heart of the Alps. Obviously, it's bordered by France and Switzerland. And the Aosta Valley is surrounded by some of the highest peaks in Europe as well. Mentioned the Cervino, but also Monte Rosa, Gran Paradiso and Mont Blanc, which obviously is the highest mountain in Western Europe as well.
Monte Bianco. Yeah.
Yes.
So some facts. There's just while I remember, Skyway Monte Bianco. Go to our YouTube channel, check out my review of the Skyway Monte Bianco. Absolutely loved it. Thought I was just going up a cable car. Way better. Like really, really good. You've been up there
lovely in the summer.
We both
really nice experience in the summer. Yeah.
So
mid-station, you've got a lovely alpine garden in the summer. It's really cool.
Brilliant. We had a live band playing at the top. Oh, it was just well recommended. Really, really good. I'd like to do it in the summer now. Mid-station.
I mean, God, I mean,
over the mid-station.
Like, I was going to say, I mean, trying to play the drums at like 4,000 meters. That's going to be quite challenging, I'd say.
Yeah, absolutely. So, Rob, some facts. There's 19 resorts, over 800 kilometers of slopes, 8 snow parks, and a single electronic ski pass for direct access to all that fabulous ski terrain. Don't you just love it? So big resorts like I can never help myself when I say that, nestled between Italy and Switzerland, La Tuile, just on the borders of Italy and France there. And then maybe some of the more sort of challenging resorts, the Cormayar, Monte Rosa, Champaloup, Bressani, and all the way through to the family-friendly resort of Pila, as I was in over New Year's. We've bored everybody with many times.
Yeah, I mean, there's something for everyone there. And with Turin, Milan and Geneva airports all within very easy reach of those resorts, they are actually amongst some of the easiest to get to from the UK as well.
Yeah, that is true.
This is pretty exciting, right? The Aosta Valley, it's one of the few places in Europe where you can go heli skiing.
Yes.
Competitive prices. So from Cormayar, there's several heli ski excursions like across the valley there.
Yeah.
Heli skiing is also available from Gressinet for those that, you know, want to explore that whole Monte Rosa area. And you know, it's a different level. And superb off-piste opportunities there. Mm. An incredible heli skiing area. La Tuile as well offers reasonably priced heli skiing. Relatively speaking, right?
Yeah.
There's kind of simple heli lifts with they just go across that Aosta region from La Tuile. So so it's interesting.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's obviously the whole Aosta region is well known for mountaineering, ski touring too, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, they've got itineraries for all levels, ranging from sort of climbs of a couple of hours, you know, on open slopes to more days on the glaciers. So there's plenty there. Mm. Yeah, and for ski mountaineers with a good level of skiing, there's also the Gran Paradiso, the only 4,000-meter mountain located entirely in Italy. So,
okay.
Yeah.
Mountain guides recommended and all that.
Definitely. And it's also the scene of major competitions such as the Tour de Retour on the legendary Mezzalama Trophy on the epic route from the Broggio Vigna to Gressinet la Trinité. I'm saying that right. Gressinet la
Trinité. I think you are.
Yeah.
Gressinet la Trinité, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
So yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's also the same for just general free riding. Monterey's a ski area. It's kind of like that ideal place, really, for off-piste skiing. There's, you know, Champlain Woods and the Salati Pass, and at 3,275 meters, the Indren Glacier, which can be easily reached with the Finifor Paso di Salati Indren cable car service. Glad I got that one out.
Yeah, exactly.
Plus, Pilar and Courmayeur, they've got, you know, huge amounts to offer free riders and off-piste skiers as well. That's a lot of free ride skiing in that region.
Yeah, absolutely. Worth mentioning non-skiers, because this area is one of the best for people that don't ski during the winter too.
Yeah, well, food options to start with, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, loads of restaurants and huts reachable by cable car, snowmobile, snowcat, open in the evenings by reservation. So yeah, absolutely. There's some seriously cool places to eat and, you know, plenty of unusual mountain, you know, the sort of usual mountain atmosphere in the moonlight. There's a great food, great wine, or great coffee if it's your thing, you know?
Yeah, sure.
Tons of snowshoeing options as well. It's a great way to experience the mountains at a relaxed pace. But if you want to go faster, there's obviously dog sledding. You can get on there, mush your own dogs, get taught how to do that. So that's very cool. I've done that
in
Canada, so it's a fun thing to do. And obviously, you've got the whole fabulous unsport nature of the Ulster Valley. So, yeah, it's available at Chavinia and Courmayeur. And, you know, you get three or four husky dogs pulling you, and you get to learn to mush your own sleigh, or you can just sit there and let somebody else do it if you want to. So, yeah, it's pretty nice. Nice, as long as you get the right conditions and the right group size, and the snow is right. Can be cold, though. Wrap up warm if you're in one of the sleds.
Pretty cool. You're not moving too much.
No. If you're sat there, it can get pretty chilly.
Yeah.
So they say children between 4 and 7 can ride in the sled with a guide. It usually starts at 8 until 12. They can drive alone like adults. So that's pretty cool. You can check that out at lovevda.at. Lovevda.at.
Okay. That does sound great, actually. And also, I'm just going to mention the spas there, because I once visited the Terme de Saint-Vincent, which owes its location to the discovery of the mineral-rich thermal spring at St. Vincent. Back in the year 1770, you know, the creative qualities earned it the moniker of Fons Salutis, or Spring of Health, of course.
Nice.
Open year round. It's a modern facility. It's a result of major redevelopment program that began in 2007. And, you know, aside from its trademark treatments such as hydrotherapy, massotherapy, and inhalation therapy, it's also home to a huge casino. I did try that, actually. I think the largest in Italy. It really is an incredible place. I really enjoyed my stay there, actually, a few years ago. And I went up to Chavinia to ski as well. So very cool place. Love that place.
Plenty of other spas in that region as well, Rob. Not just the ones we mentioned there. Okay. So the natural springs of Pre Saint Didier and the Monterosa Spa. Yeah, pretty nice.
Yeah, very nice.
Partial to a spa when you need a little bit of a break and the legs.
Once in a while.
Replenishing, yeah. Once in a while.
Yeah. I mean, I must say, actually, I don't really do that at spas, but that St. Vincent Spa, I definitely did that one. I was like, this looks very cool. And the pool was, it really was very cool.
Where do we get more information on all of those spas?
Yeah, for the whole area, just check out the Aosta Valley website, which is aosta-valley.co.uk.
Perfect.
Yeah, just remember, right, a little recap. The Aosta Valley region, it's got 16 ski resorts. It's an easy location from the UK, either by car via the Mont Blanc Tunnel, or you're there straight away when you pop out of the tunnel, or via Turin or Milan airports. I mean, I'd say there's something for everyone in the Aosta Valley. You know, families, absolutely. Adrenaline seekers, and foodies for sure, you know, definitely.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I would definitely back that up. I mean, it's one of my favorite places. And yeah, it's a big favorite for me. We try to go every winter. We stopped, obviously, during COVID, but it was the last place we went to pre-COVID. It was the first place we went to post-COVID. So yeah, absolutely.
Well, maybe, Dom, next up then, heli skiing in the Aosta Valley.
Do you know, Rob? Let's do it. Yeah, so they're definitely up for a bit of heli skiing in Aosta. I'm super keen to do heli skiing, but I'm just a little bit scared.
Of what? The helicopter or the skiing?
The skiing.
Okay.
I very nearly booked myself and I really do want to do it. And he just said to me, he said, you need to be well beyond an expert skier. He said, you need to be.
Really?
Yeah. He said, are you pretty comfortable with very steep tree terrain?
Oh.
And I said, I'm fairly comfortable with steep terrain and I'm fairly comfortable with tree terrain, but very steep tree terrain, maybe not.
No, sure. That's interesting because I think I have heli-skied around that region before and I've seen a bit of everything. You know, I have seen some steep terrain, but I've also seen terrain that isn't necessarily super hard, super difficult, and quite accessible.
I watched a few of the videos. We're digressing. Rob, take me on a heli-ski experience in Aosta Valley.
Okay, it can be done, I'm sure. It can definitely be done. Okay.
Let's do that.
All right, cool.
That could be our next bucket list adventure.
Yeah, I'm definitely up for a bit of heli-skiing out of Aosta, for sure.
So talking about bucket list, Rob, we're off to our bucket list destination this time. Join Ben and Clow, who are traveling around 24 resorts in 7 weeks. Let's hear what they had to say, Rob. Right, guys, are super lucky today to be joined by Ben and Clow. Can't believe I can actually see you guys. How awesome. How are you?
Really good, thank you. Really good. Legs are holding up just about, Clow.
Yeah, we're all good. We're all good. We're enjoying it a lot. So far, so good. Touch wood.
Still got all our bones, which I think is probably number one tick in the box after 2 weeks.
Yeah, absolutely. So where are you now? Whereabouts are you now?
We are in Lazar.
Yeah, arrived earlier today. Beautiful sunshine as it has been for the last week or two.
Fantastic. That's pretty good. Pretty good. So for the listeners, you're doing this 24 in 24. So 24 resorts, 7 weeks in 2024. Can you give us a very quick run through your itinerary, just a blast through where you've been and where you're going?
So we started in the Italian Alps in City B, straight into the French Alps, across to Saint-Chevalier, then into Les Deux Alpes, up the Oise, then into the Three Valleys. So Saint-Martin, Valtellin, Les Minuits, Courchevel, Marybel. And now we're in...
And then we're off to Chamonix. And then we're off to Switzerland, following to Pramontana, St. Moritz, and then Austria.
We're going to start in St. Anton in Austria, make our way through to Ischgl, onto Kitzbühel, Stahlbeck, Zellem Zee, Capron, Meierhofen, Solden, and then we end in the Italian Dolomites, where Klaus obviously grown up and skied for most of her life. So where are we then?
That is spectacular. Well, Ben, you certainly have that. I'm not saying that you don't smile, Klaus, but Ben, you seem to have this like 24-hour smile on your face. So I'm guessing it's going according to plan.
According to plan, definitely. But having the time of our lives, if I'm honest. if you could ask anyone that likes to ski, do they want to do 7 weeks abroad visiting four countries? I think people would bite your hand off. Yeah. So yes, having a great time.
Living the dream.
I mean, it does feel pretty rapid fire. Do you feel like you're getting a proper view of each resort, or do you come away thinking didn't really get to see that enough?
I think we're pretty good on that side. We're really enjoying it. Obviously, we wish we could spend more time in each resort because so far it's been awesome. Like, we're loving it. Every resort that we've been to, it was such a great time. So it's definitely going well. Ben, what do you think?
I think because we knew we were doing everything in rapid fire, as you say, Dom, we put so much sort of research and thought into, right, when we're in resort, what are we doing? Yeah. So instead of just turning up and deciding, we'll just go with the flow, which is a brilliant way to ski and things like that. We'd made a few notes before we came out here. Is there one bar that you really want to go to? Yeah. Or is there that red run that's famous or something like that? But then we've picked it up as we've gone on the slope.
We've met some amazing people. We just tug along into some bars or like après. We just kind of like met people on the slopes, really exchanged Instagrams or numbers and be like, where are you going after? Let's meet up to hit some runs together and then have a beer. So
I'll tell you what, the ESF ski instructors are fantastic for knowledge around the resort. Get on the chairlift with them, sit next to them, poke them, even if they don't want to know you, and say, right, where am I skiing today? Which part is good in the afternoon? Which part's good in the morning?
I love it.
And we've certainly taken the benefit from them.
Oh, that's fantastic. Good old ESF. We love them in the red coats. Any pleasant surprises so far anywhere that you're sort of thinking, blimey, wow, that place was great?
I think we were very pleasantly surprised about Serre Chevalier. We loved it. Snow work was great. The village was amazing. Massive domain to ski. Very, very different. And we're certainly going to go back. I really loved the fact that the village had both an old type of vibe and a more modern one.
Yeah.
Really loved it.
Yeah.
I'd agree with that. Because Serre Chevalier is not somewhere that, if I'm honest, my friends have been to, or that I've really heard to, is somewhere that you really need to go to. However, when you got there, you might not have the reputation of the other large French resorts and things like that, but skiing through the trees was something that I don't really think I've experienced anywhere else. Like, we were so fortunate to have snow falling while we were there. It was really quite magical. You're skiing through these parts and down into the village. They've just had a brand new gondola built for this season. It was only installed completed 2 or 3 weeks before we arrived.
Yeah.
Wow. So quick up to the top into the main ski area, and you could ski all the way down to the bottom. And it was really beautiful. And I think the first thing that struck us when we got there was how the whole town was lit up in winter lights. So trees, magical animals, the little old village as you walked through across the river, there was lights all over the bridge, really majestic and looked beautiful. I think that was something that really stood out for us.
I definitely sense that from some of your social posts, and I know that you definitely got lucky with the weather, because I had the resort messaging me about a day before you got there saying, do they really have to come because the weather's going to be awful? Of course, it snowed. And, you know, the next minute she's texting going, they're having a blast. They're having an amazing
time. Yeah, it was lovely. To be honest, the second day when it was sunny, we didn't even have a break. We just had a coffee on the slopes and just skied the entire day from like 9 a.m. until 4 p.m. Just stopped for not even half hour, probably. So that's how nice it was. Fresh powder.
Amazing. It was good. And as you say, Dom, big shout out to Lisa, who met us in the morning on the first day. Really, really nice to get a map, a little guide around where we should visit and sort of what weather conditions would be good for that part of the resort. And she made sure that we skied a piece of Brunson, which we definitely didn't regret. It was a really good place.
That's fantastic. So on to the next stage. Which resorts do you think you're looking forward to most next? Have you got anywhere, got your in your sights?
I've got a couple, but Cloud, do you want to go first?
No, you go first.
We got Ischgl, which is our second stop in Austria, and renowned for some of its après ski, renowned for some of its slopes. And I won't lie, we've been following a few different skiers on Instagram that are relatively big on Instagram out there, and they've been visiting Ischgl in the last week or two, and it looks absolutely incredible. Fantastic. So I'm really looking forward to that, and also Salbach. And they've got a route, I think they call it the ski circus, similar to the Celeronda in Italy, around the whole district of Salbach. I think you have to catch something like 32 lifts in one day. And me and Clow are looking at it going, hopefully our legs will be in there.
Yeah.
I think it's going to be 4 or 5.
We're a bit scared of the front, aren't we? We're going to try our best. Worst come worst, we just stop and get a bus on the way back.
That's right. I'm sure do a bit of hitchhiking, pretend I'm European, Clow can just act normal.
Wow, well, that's two cracking resorts to be looking forward to, that's for sure. And I know there's plenty more besides. So, you know, your feet on the ground, we see all these Instagram pictures from lots of other people and resorts and tour operators and all that. What's the weather conditions really like? How would you sum it up, what you've seen so far?
I think that snow conditions are good. The weather changes quite quickly. One day can be very cold, one day very warm, snow, rain, but the higher up you go, the better the snow is, definitely. What most resorts probably have been experiencing is that if they are quite low, they can get be ice on the slopes, but that's normal. Every resort has been experiencing that, right?
I think the more people we've spoken to throughout the resorts, once you get sort of above 2-3 on the actual slopes, you're fine. When you're getting slightly below that and you're skiing all the way into resort at 16, 1700, 1800, those last 200-300 meters on the way down are a bit icy, but I don't think any resort is any different because everyone's saying the same. And that's just because you're getting rain plus snow plus sun, and the conditions are changing quite rapidly, quite often.
Yeah, absolutely. But
that being said, up the top, we've had about 11 bluebird days in a row now.
Oh, God, I hate you so much. I hate you so much.
What a shame.
And I saw you, Ben, were complaining about your stinky socks. So how many pairs did you actually take? What are they like now?
So I actually took 12 pairs. Wow. We did a massive amount of shopping before we came. But I think
there weren't enough. I told you multiple times, get more.
Forget the socks. We've been kept warm a lot by our snow flannel base layers and mid layers, which thankfully don't smell anywhere near as bad as my socks. Even though they've been warm a good 5 or 10 times already.
I just hand washed them in the bath now. But definitely, it's been very cold the first week. We were super fine with that. Also, our new Helly Hansen as well. Massive shout out to these guys for supporting us.
Hell yeah. And if you've seen this social with Dom, you'll see how good the Helly Hansen looks.
That's fantastic. I love it. So you've been a little bit prepared for those questions. So I'm going to give you a few questions that you weren't prepared for. Very quick fire for you. These have just come in from Rob, who's traveling at the minute. What's your best apres experience so far?
Mine personally was Balturan, I think. It's very famous for its apres scene, you must say. We loved it. We had apres up the mountain and then went down in the village as well. And
ask Claire how her head is, and not because of the hangover. Go on.
Yeah, I was enjoying it so much, I just fell on the floor.
I saw the tumble. Not
follow
good.
Our Instagram. Yes.
It looks like the best TikTok transition you'll ever find. But I promise you, it was not staged. That was just Cloud falling on our ass.
Yeah, you've had your own fair share of face plants, and I know that Cloud didn't give you a lot of sympathy. So I think you're okay though.
Yeah, she's always checked whether I'm all right first before she laughs. But I'm not sure that makes up for the hysterical cackle that comes
after. Oh, and Rob also asked, what's the hardest thing about being a ski bum on the road?
Honestly, this is one thing that hurts me a lot: packing and unloading the car when you're changing resorts and hotels and apartments every 2 or 3 days, or even 1 or 2 days, depending on where we've been.
I think also the fact that you get to a resort and on the second day you start to adapt to it, you start to find out new little spots, or like that slope that you really enjoy, or that bar that you really love, and then you just have to leave and you're like, oh no, what a shame.
Very tough, that.
There's a permanent list being drawn up that's already got 9 resorts on it, everyone we've been to or places we'll get back to. So
yeah.
I probably don't need to ask this question because I can tell the chemistry between you, but do you still like each other?
I mean, there's been Guess a few what? Debates, I would put it that way.
Just one earlier, in fact. I wanted to stay at Apres until too late, and I wanted to eat.
You must be burning some cash all that apres.
You want to check your hip flasks on the way in, so make sure you stash it.
I like it. This is a great question. Is there any way you've been so far, and this might be something to ask you again another time, that you've said, do you know what, when we're old, this is where we're coming to retire?
Yes.
100%.
Immediately, the first place that comes to mind is St.
Martin. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, we loved it. Such a great village. Hearing about the history of the village itself was so nice.
Shout out to Nappy from the tourism office, who took us around, took us for dinner, took us into a really quaint
family run,
been passed down from the grandpa to the dad to the grandson.
Wow.
Been in place for 50 years. Was beautiful. Really sort of chilled out, really family orientated. The hotel we were staying in, the Lodgy Hotel. Oh my God, it's only been in place
unbelievable.
Two, I think this is the third season, so just over 2 years.
And we met the owner on the second morning, which was fantastic. Gave us a bottle of the Genepee in a hip flask with the Lodgy branding on it. It was fantastic.
And do you think you can handle five more weeks?
Definitely.
Well, put it this way. If I can't, then my life might as well end. If I can't enjoy five more weeks of science.
It's a bit tiring. We're not going to lie. It has been a bit tiring.
Yeah.
But you just need to admit that and sometimes just stop and relax a little bit.
Yeah,
that's it. Slow down. Maybe not, because the first week, I think we were so excited that we just skied every day from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. without just stopping for a small lunch or something, whilst now we're taking a bit more in and going slower and just enjoying the full day.
6 in 7 is probably a good metric to live by, and we'll just let the weather dictate when that day off comes.
And for Ben, skiing is the first sort of exercise he's done in the past probably a year or so. Sorry, I had to take that off my chest.
Judging by the luxurious meals I've been seeing you having, I don't think you'll have any joy if you want to lose a kilo or two, that's for sure.
We have honestly had some fantastic meals, particularly in the Three Valleys, especially at Le Portetta Hotel at Cucina Angelina. Fantastic food there.
Great wine, great atmosphere as well. Right?
So I want to say a massive thanks. The listeners have probably thoroughly enjoyed this. I know I have. It's been great to catch up with you. Where can everybody follow and check you out, what you're doing day to day?
So you've got @InTheSnow_magazine is the Insta. That's where all of the content is posted through. We repost pretty much everything for our own Instagram account, which is clownben_skitravels. So you'll find everything there. And then you've also got the TikTok, which is In The Snow Mag again. So make sure you're following that. There's a lot of fun being posted, and we've got a lot of built-up content that we're just waiting for a day or two where we can properly get our heads down and get it posted.
Well, the stuff that you've been posting so far has been massively engaging, really enjoyable. It's great seeing what you two are up to. Very jealous sat back here in the office, but following what you do with interest, it's absolutely brilliant. I think it's an absolute marathon, but it is equally the best job in the world. Let's face it.
Person you've met has been saying the same thing. Oh my God, how can I sign up for that?
Well, thank you so much. Been great to catch up, and we'll catch up with you again in a couple of weeks' time. It's so good seeing you in one piece, healthy, and looking far healthier, younger, and more beautiful than I do. But it's great to see you today.
I don't know about all of that, but yeah, great to see
great
you
to
too.
See you too, Dom.
Take it easy.
No,
bye bye.
Pretty sure it's called a walkie-talkie, mate.